Passionate, driven, enthusiastic, euphoric. This is who we are as entrepreneurs. But how we leverage these incredible attributes to dream and build businesses that scale and grow is what this podcast is all about. Hello, I'm attorneypreneur Josh Brown, and welcome to Franchise Euphoria. Are you making good financial decisions for your life and for your business? Well, you're going to find out here today. I'm delighted to have Roger Whitney as my guest today on Franchise Euphoria. Roger began his career as a financial advisor in 1991. He witnessed firsthand the rise and fall of the, quote, new economy and the dot-com bubble that ended in 2000. This experience solidified for Roger that financial management is about people, not money, and that they serve best by advisors that are fiduciaries to their clients and have the heart of a teacher. In 2003, Roger left, at the time, the largest private bank in the world, and with two wonderful partners established WWK Wealth Advisors. Today, they are a firm of 14 professionals managing over $300 million in assets. Roger is also the host of a tremendous podcast called The Retirement Answer Man, where he discusses and answers questions around the fun and enlightening subject of finances. Hello, Roger, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Josh. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, many people in the audience are considering a move into entrepreneurship, franchise ownership, and other endeavors outside of the corporate world. I'd love to kick this interview off with you, touching on your experience in the corporate world and then leaving to start your own wealth management firm.
Well, I am a big fan of being an entrepreneur. My parents were entrepreneurs, and 11 years ago, I guess it was, August of 2003, my partners and I left a major firm and started our own entrepreneurial journey, and it's been the best thing that we ever did. It was one of the hardest things we ever did, and I say a blessing every day that it worked the way that it did. So I'm definitely a big fan of entrepreneurship in building wealth and managing your family's finances.
So was this something that you and the partners had planned on for quite some time? And the reason I'm asking is because there's a lot of people out there who, quite frankly, are stuck in jobs they don't like, or maybe have worked for a career in the corporate world and are really looking for a way out. And oftentimes they think of franchising as a great way to do it. But what I often find is that they don't take the time and do the due diligence to really figure out what's going to be the good next move for them. I'm curious the process you and your partners went through before starting your own firm.
Well, I was blessed to have one partner who had been on numerous entrepreneurial journeys. One of my partners, Phil, had been CEO of a company and had been in private equity and various forms and owned small businesses. So I had a lot of his screw ups that he had before he even got to me that I was able to learn from and lean on before I made the jump. But when we were at a major investment firm, for us, the journey, it started with he and I, and it was our frustration with not being able to execute our business plan within the confines of a major corporation. And it just became clearer and clearer that this was not the place for us to serve our clients best. And we, from the time that we made that recognition to going independent, it was about a year and a half. We went really slow in how we were going to do it, because it's easy just to say, this is wrong for me, I'm going to go do that without doing all that legwork. And that's really what saved us, I think.
Well, it's the hardest thing in the world, quite frankly. I mean, I see it every single day in which people get, what happens is they don't take the time to plan and then they get really frustrated and then make impulsive moves. Now, in your case, what's fascinating to me is that you did it with a few partners as well. And I'm curious, did you guys have your roles identified before you made the move? Did you already have that trust in place, or was it a little bit like, well, we're all sort of feeling the same frustrations and we'll figure it out as we go?
That's actually a really good question. And I think that's where our partnership is more unique than most, at least in our industry, is I had been looking, I'm a team kind of guy, and I had been looking for partners that I could look to grow something pretty cool with. And what I found was, and I'm sure this is the same way in every business, you know, you like to work on cars and your buddy likes to work on cars. So you start a business together, right?
Yeah.
And that's great. But if both of you like to work on cars, who's going to do the books? Who's going to do answer the phone? Who's going to do all the other things? You have two skill sets that are identical. And that's generally how a business will start. And that's not necessarily the best way to find a partner, at least I think. So for us, I was the industry guru in the sense I had all the certifications. I had all the street cred in financial planning and investment management and counseling. Phil had all the street cred in business management because he had run businesses and grown businesses and sold businesses and bought businesses. So he was the business skill set. And Lorna, our third partner, had all the street cred in managing a business in terms of the day-to-day operations and making things actually work. So we have very distinct kitchens that we manage, so we are more than just two guys that like to build cars together.
That's really, really great. You probably, my guess is you probably didn't even appreciate at the time how unique and how good of a position that was to be starting from.
Yeah, it wasn't like we had this grand plan. We just sort of iterated to where we are today.
Well, you know what I find? I don't know if you find this or not, Roger, but see, what happens is there's a fear factor. There's always a fear factor when you go and do something new, right? And I think people, to a certain extent have a false security about what their security really is in the corporate world, but there's a fear of going to the unknown. And so people like to have other people along for the ride. And it just so happens that they naturally go and find other people that they relate to the best, which usually are people that are very similar to them, but that in reality will probably make horrible partners for them. But people find comfort in that. And then, next thing you know, they're on the entrepreneurial train and they have some real tough decisions to make where they have... They've got a partner, but they're both really good at the same things and they have glaring weaknesses. And so I think that's really, really smart what you guys did. And I think it shows a certain maturity and wherewithal to do that. And so it's no doubt that here this many years later, I think you said 11 years ago that you've got a successful firm like you have. I'm curious, you've been in the financial space a long time. What do you think the biggest change is that you've seen from a consumer perspective over the years?
From a consumer perspective, I think, and this is something that I'm actually really excited about, is that the consumers are becoming more informed and more equipped. So they're on the same playing level as their advisors in terms of the knowledge base. Now, I'm not so much in the wisdom base because they don't see a lot of things happening, but and I'm sure it's similar in your business in the legal practice. All the information is out there for the most part. Maybe not to write a contract in the way an attorney would, but if they want to look up how something works, they can figure it out via Google, right?
Sure.
And I think the financial industry, it's exactly the same way. At one point, investors had no ability to even get a quote on a company or a mutual fund other than looking in the paper. They'd have to, so the advisors controlled the prices of things and what they were. And then once prices were available via technology, the consumer had no ability to actually place a trade because they had to use an advisor or intermediary. Now you can place a trade. I could probably sit here and day trade while I was talking to you if I wanted. So the consumer can do that now. And that disintermediation of all the access to the financial markets and the planning tools and everything else. And I think that's really exciting for the consumer because it makes them more empowered to demand value if they happen to choose to use an advisor from that advisor. And it's going to force, and it is, our industry to transform. Hey, man, you can't just be a nice guy that can play golf and hold a good conversation. You're going to have to add a lot of value to the situation or you will be disintermediated.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I mean, I think it's never been easier in this day and age to sort of do it yourself, right? I mean, we have so many options and tools out there. And, you know, one of the things I've been doing with my law practice is instead of trying to swim upstream, you know, there are a certain number of people out there who are always going to be do-it-yourselfers. And so, you know, I'm creating products, educational products that will help them along the way. But that, you know, that won't take away from the professional service side. And to your point, you know, it's never been more important to always be adding the value and showing your value to the clientele. I was having a conversation with actually a fellow 48 Days Masterminder, Jeff Long, and I were talking about this. And, you know, he does video production. And I was talking about, you know, how the state of the world in terms of everybody thinks they're a video producer these days, right? You know, because they have a cell phone and they can go capture video. But we were talking about how it's really an artwork, just like, you know, doing what you do is an artwork. Being a good and effective legal counsel is an artwork. And it's that experience factor that never goes away. It's the nuances, I think, in what we do that I think people who have been around long enough really appreciate. You know, because, yeah, certain people, I could go on and try to be my own financial advisor. I would never do that. I mean, that is not what I do. That's not the skill set I have. I would rather pay somebody else to do that. But I just think that I agree with you. In this day and age, I mean, you have to show more and more what your value is, because the first place people go to find anything is on the internet. And it's very, very easy to believe that you can just do it yourself when oftentimes you can't.
Well, let's talk about that. It's a really good point, Josh. If you think of it, and this is a great opportunity for anybody that wants to be an entrepreneur that has some type of skill set. So let's use James as an example. In fact, I could show you a picture of my office where my podcast studio is, and it looks like a video studio because I have lots of fancy equipment. I have little wisdom of how to use it. I have knowledge on how to use it, very, very little wisdom of how to use it. And I think for an entrepreneur, if you're looking at starting a franchise or a business, it can be intimidating because, you know, I don't know, you know, let's say you're starting a chicken shop. Well, there are lots of great chicken shops out there. Yes. But there's a big distinction between knowledge, which is totally available to anyone, and wisdom. And it's the wisdom that people will ultimately pay for. The people that are on that journey to do things themselves will pay for your wisdom to leapfrog their own progress. So they may not be long-term clients, but they will come to you for tutorials and learning solutions so they can leapfrog their own knowledge and wisdom. And then there's going to be a larger percentage probably that will value your wisdom and just want you to do it for them. And I think that's where the big opportunity is it's not just, you know, equipping, you know, and having do it, you know, you only have people that want to have you do it. You're going to have all the people that are do-it-yourselfers that are very motivated and very smart people that just want to jumpstart their learning. I'll use myself as an example in my launching my podcast, The Retirement Answer Man, in March. I bought online tutorials from a guy named Cliff Ravenscraft, who is the podcast answer man. And my purchasing his $30, $50, $100 products leapfrogged me probably 3 or 4 years in my journey to being a do-it-yourself podcaster. And if you're looking to start a business, you want to be the wisdom, not just the knowledge broker. You want to be the wisdom broker because that's one thing that nobody can disintermediate. I'll use myself as an example. I have walked hundreds and hundreds of journeys with families and individuals on planning finances and transitioning towards retirement. So I've seen a lot of things. I've seen things work really well and things work really poorly. That can't be found on Google. That's going to be found in the lifetime of experiences of every individual professional, just like you as an attorney. And that's the real opportunity for the idea of being an entrepreneur now.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, and you know, a lot of it just comes down to, I mean, it really, you know, the people who who look for the quick answers or who minimize the value of an entire profession, you know, like financial advisors, attorneys, or whatever it is, right? You know, I think to a certain extent, it's a little bit, it's a little bit short-sighted on their end. And then it's also, you know, some of the blame falls on us for not being more clear in our value proposition. I do think things have changed. I mean, from the perspective of it used to be, you know, people would pay big money for a contract, you know, for, let's take my field, for example, in the legal space. But now really you can go online and find a standard form contract anywhere. I mean, they're a dime a dozen. They've been commoditized to a certain extent. But what has not been commoditized is how you take that contract to the specific situation of that person. That's where the real nugget, that's where the real value of the services are. And probably that's where it's always been. But there just wasn't the tool, the internet tool, to be able to find this information so readily before, where now there is. So I think it is changing. But to your point, I mean, you know, the more experience, you know, I get, the more experience we all get, the more you see where whenever I've tried to take a shortcut myself or try to do something myself that I otherwise wasn't in a best position to do, I've always regretted it. I've always just thought, boy, how much of my time was just wasted there? I should have just gone to the pros and just, as you said, just elevated myself past other people by spending a little bit of money up front, because at some point in time, you're probably going to spend it anyways.
Well, I imagine with your specialty in franchising, that's sort of the value proposition, right? It's
sure.
Yeah. You have somebody that entrepreneur, they want to start a business and they look at franchising as, hey, this is a proven system that I can plug into. And then they have to make that value proposition like everybody. Wow, man, those franchising fees are expensive and I got to do that and I got to do this. Why? And then they start to think, well, I could just go rent this space over here and create a name and start to think of do it yourself. And you can do it that way.
Oh, sure. You could go on, like, you know, in franchising, there's a document called the Franchise Disclosure Document, right? And it's a standard document. It's required under federal law and state law. And you could go online and find thousands of ways in which people have interpreted and said, okay, this is what item one is. The document contains 23 mandated items. And I always get a kick out of it because people will sometimes say, when they buy a franchise, you know, why do I need an attorney? You know, the documents are more standardized and I really can't affect that much change. And in some instances, that's true. But, the bigger point is that's only part of the equation. The biggest part of the equation is that a good franchise attorney is going to help educate you on the actual system that you're buying and on the nuances of the contract so that you're put in the best position moving forward. And I think it's the same in your space. You know, that's going to be the highest value proposition, for the professional services we provide.
It's that wisdom. And I think right now for the consumer, we're in that transitional phase. I don't know so much about, I'd be interested in your business. I know in our business, we're in that transitional phase, and this would be my argument anyway, that most financial advisors are still the old model. They still are the product knowledge sales presentation structure of being an advisor, but there's this emerging community of advisors that are really focused on adding value and focusing on the wisdom rather than the access and the expertise of all the brainiacs at Wall Street owns. And I think we're in that transitional phase to a much more professional industry.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, interesting discussion. I feel like we could talk about that for quite some time. I mean, it's really pertinent to where our industries are and where a lot of other industries are. And that is, you know, the shifting of the line, per se, of where the highest value is for the services that we provide. And quite frankly, that's what all of us are trying to find and trying to stay within. I'm curious, as we shift speeds a little bit here, is what's the biggest mistake that you believe small business owners make when it comes to retirement?
Oh, is not to diversify their balance sheet thoughtfully well before that retirement event. you know, when I look at wealth building, and that's ultimately what a business owner, which we're all doing as we progress in our careers, is we're building our chassis, our net worth to provide for us, not just now, but also in the future. And that's ultimately the financial decisions come down to, how do I live as well as I can today without sacrificing tomorrow? And we're all trying to balance that teeter-totter with every decision that we make. And oftentimes what I find with entrepreneurs is, and I find this with myself because I'm an entrepreneur, is the best return on my investment is always my business, right? It's going to be investing in my skill set, investing in equipment, expanding. If I have X dollars to, you know, excess free cash flow that I can take from the business, I have to decide what to do with that excess free cash flow. And you can do only so many things. You can pay down debt. You can keep it in the business and reinvest. You can take it out as a distribution. And oftentimes what business owners do is they always reinvest in their business, which is not a bad thing. That is the chassis of your wealth building. But what I find is that they end up keeping all of their eggs in one basket because they just simply look at the numbers. And that's where your ROI is going to be. Your return on investment is always going to be best in your business, assuming you're a good business owner. And so what ends up happening is that's their basket. And they feel they have the ultimate control over things, which we really don't have any control over anything. But they feel like they have the ultimate control over things, so that gives them comfort. So what ends up happening is they have very little assets outside of their business. And as you get closer to retirement, that can be a problem. It can be a problem in a couple ways. It can be a problem in that their business may not be really set up for sales. Maybe it's a personal services business that feels like a business that may not have a lot of value to a buyer. Or it may be that there's some issues with the business and you don't have any don't go broke money on the side. So that's probably the biggest issue, is that they keep focusing only on their business when they think about their personal balance sheet.
Well, I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, I know for myself, I'm dealing with that right as we speak right now. I mean, thinking about some of the excess cash from the business and saying, okay, do I want to go pay down some debt? Do I want to go invest in the retirement account, put some money there, or do I want to reinvest? And it's almost like like you said, I mean, it's a combination of all three. And it's challenging, though, to try to think through and figure out, okay, what's the smartest way to do it? Right? I mean, I guess it just depends on the type of business.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
There is no perfect answer.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not the issue. Number one issue with every, just for, you know, business owners, it's really with everybody. And, you know, for us, we spend 80-90% of our conversation on exactly that. Okay. What does the cash flow look like? Do we have excess cash flow, God willing? And if we do, what do you do with it? And then you look to your balance sheet to work through that issue, assuming you know exactly what your priorities are. So once you know your priorities and you have excess cash, then it's just walking through that discussion of where is the best place to deploy it on our balance sheet. And for us, we have it down to a, you know, very systematic checklist type of system to help facilitate those discussions with the people that we work with. But that's just like, that's how a business owner does it every year when they look at their income and their revenue and their expenses, and they work through the same type of decisions every single year.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the interesting things I find, and I know it's impacted your business, as we've talked about a little bit, is that, you know, retirement, the whole thinking about retirement has changed, right? I mean, it always used to be, okay, I'm going to retire at 65, 70 and you know, just go to Florida and lay at the beach. I know for myself and for a lot of other people, I just don't think of retirement the way that maybe my parents did or my grandparents did. I don't think of myself as retiring. Quite frankly, I love what I do. And I'm the type of person that would go crazy if I was just sitting around not doing something. And, you know, a lot of times I'm finding in the franchise space that you have a lot of people who have worked for a company for many, many years, they retire. And then after about a year, they get bored and they want to get back in the game. And so they start looking at franchise businesses because, of course, they want to take advantage of a brand and of a system. And they don't want to start from scratch. I'm curious when you think it's wise to take your retirement funds and invest in a franchise or in starting a business. And I know it depends on the person and depends on the situation, but I got to think that you're dealing with that quite a bit more now than possibly you have in the past. And I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on it.
Wow. You've hit on a lot of different, really important points there, Josh. So think about that. Your description of someone that in the corporate world that retires and then they find themselves getting bored. So they look to franchising or starting a business or doing something else to fill that attention gap because they realize, wow, I wasn't really wanting to retire. I was just wanting to get out of what I was in. So they were really running away from something rather than running to something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So then they, and this is something that we've seen time and time again, and I definitely have strong views on how retirement's changing from what I've seen. But to your point, okay, so you've run away from that corporate world and you want to do something because you realize, man, I'm still motivated. I'm excited and I have things I want to do, things I want to prove, and I want to be intellectually involved. And that's exactly how most of us are a lot longer than we realize. Then it becomes, well, I need to do something. Well, you can go be a golf course marshal or a Walmart greeter, or, you know, but if you're more entrepreneurial minded, now you want to start a business or look at starting a business. And that's a really, and typically you're going to be what, 55, 60 years old, right?
Which is young, right? That's young today.
Which is young, yes. But when you get to, okay, well, what funds do I have to do that? Now, this is a really critical period of time when you're between 55 and 65 years old, because you have a lot of juice left in the tank to go do something and be involved, but not, you're not 20 and you're not 30. So your ultimate earnings capacity is limited by time. Right. It's going to be, you know, some people work into their 80s. Sure.
Sure.
But you have health issues and family issues, lots of things that can come into play a lot more than when you're in your 20s and your 30s. And when you're starting a business, when you're in your 30s and maybe even your 40s, you have the advantage of, man, if you really screw all this up, you can really work your way out of it. Right. You can go get a job and earn back, you know, some semblance to what you blew in that failed venture. Well, when you're in your 55 to 65, although you have a lot of time that you can work, you don't have a lot of time to fix a lot of big screw-ups.
That's a great point. It's a really
and
good
that's
point.
That's the hard part in, okay, what do I, how much money do I actually put towards this entrepreneurial venture?
Well, and it was interesting. It was interesting, Roger. I was just reading the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if it was today or the other day or last week. There's an entire article about how the baby boomer age and the sort of at the traditional retiree age, they're finding now through studies that that's sort of where your creativity, your ability to make friendships, your comfort level, your confidence level is really at its peak, which is really giving a lot of baby boomers an advantage in terms of entrepreneurial advantage and business advantage. And you're seeing a lot of them come out of that space into successful businesses. But to your point, you know, I think some people think, well, I'm just going to work forever until I don't need to worry about retirement. And that is just a terrible thing, terrible assumption to make, because like you said, as you get older, your health may fail, you're going to have other family issues. And like you said, I mean, that's just a very risky proposition to undertake.
And you tell me this, Josh, the hard part, when you get somebody that has, you know, 55 to 60 that has an entrepreneurial bug because they ran away from something, it starts to take on a life of its own and becomes this very optimistic courting period of starting a business that can lead to marriage very quickly and maybe prematurely.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially when people are running from something. I mean, especially people who have their whole life done work that they haven't really found joy in, right? I mean, I think it's different when you've been an entrepreneur your whole life and then at 60 you have a new idea. Well, you know, that's just sort of par for the course, right? I mean, that's the nature of the entrepreneurial spirit. But there's a whole lot of people out there who have just stayed stuck in a position, and now they finally feel that release, that freedom to be able to go out and do what they think they want to do. And sometimes it works out great and other times it doesn't. But I find that people are definitely more anxious and less patient with the process when they've never done it before.
I can give you two very quick examples, client examples of people that have walked what we're talking about, and one that did it very successfully and one that did not so much.
Oh, please do.
So one gentleman who is probably, he's been a client for over 20 years. Man, I feel old. He left a major telecom company and always hated work. He just wanted to work outside, and he never worked outside. And he retired in his mid-50s because he had a buyout. And he always wanted to work outside, so he started a landscape business because he wanted to play in the dirt, and he was just at his element. And he had his, you know, his buyout from his corporation and all that in place. But what he did, rather than take all that money and make a big bet on his entrepreneurial journey, he just bought a truck, bought some equipment, and went and played in the dirt. And then slowly cash flowed the next truck and hiring his first employee and then his second employee, never touching any of his retirement funds, his nest egg. He did it step by step by step. And ultimately what he did was he built a company that he brought his two sons into. Finally, one of his sons bought out the company, and now he is back in his truck with three employees, just servicing a handful of clients and having a blast playing in the dirt. But what he did was he did it very, he was the tortoise.
He's the baby boomer bootstrapper.
There you go. He's the baby boomer bootstrapper. I'd say that three times fast. And contrast that with, a number of clients I could say, but they get that entrepreneurial journey and then it becomes a courting, and then they get super excited about this opportunity, and they bet it all. They go buy the big franchise, or they, even if it's not a franchise, they go put money down on space. They build that field of dreams, basically. They spend all the money up front before they've ever proven the concept and their ability to manage it, because they're so excited about the opportunity that, and some of them have worked out, but some of them, a lot of them don't. They don't prove the concept, or they shoot themselves in the foot unknowingly, and they've blown it all, and they have no earnings capacity to make any of it up. You know, it's a very different way of approaching things. We tend to take the more tortoise approach.
No, and I think that's smart. And I think it's so applicable to the franchise space. As I tell people, you know, if you want to go out and try something and you're not 100% sure, and you're just looking at a franchise system because you think it's going to be easier, or you think it's a business in a box, you really have another thing coming, because it's a business. And you have to operate the business. A principle and a big difference between a franchise and just a business that you launch and slowly organically grow would be that at the end of the day, if that business doesn't work out, well, you can shut it down and move on. When you get into a franchise, you're typically looking at a 10-year contract or more, and you're sort of stuck. And you're out all those fees up front. So to your point, it's like that person taking everything and investing it in one basket, as opposed to taking the slow and steady approach. And, you know, every situation is different, and sometimes it's warranted to take the slow and steady. And sometimes, you know, people find great opportunities and are able to leverage their investments in franchise systems. But I really like the nuances that we've touched upon today. And, we are quickly running out of time. I mean, we have run over. It's been such a fascinating conversation. So I'd like to have you on another time down the road, and we can continue the conversation. But before we go, what I would love to hear you take a couple minutes to talk about is your podcast, The Retirement Answer Man. I think a lot of people are going to be interested in that. Talk about that, what you do on each show, and sort of how you're helping people through that podcast.
Yeah, my podcast is The Retirement Answer Man. It's on iTunes and Stitcher and all those things. And each week I share a tip on how to invest wisely and how to plan well for retirement. But again, I think about retirement a little bit differently. So it's really about how to find that balance between living well today without sacrificing your tomorrow in how you organize your financial life. And I have a blast doing it. And I answer any questions that I get from listeners, and it's amazing the feedback I get from people and the questions I get. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about, serving the people that are the listeners. So you can check that out on iTunes, and I'm on Twitter at @Roger_Whitney. That is one of the few places I'm allowed to interact with the public because of all the regulations involved. So if you're on Twitter, you can connect with me there.
Any other place to connect with you?
Oh yeah. And then RogerWhitney.com is my blog, and I have you have one, which is cool. You ask, I answer. You can really ask me any question. You go to RogerWhitney.com and click on You Ask, I Answer, and I'll answer any question directly to you. And then I blog there frequently on all the things I'm passionate about, which is planning for retirement and living well.
Well, that's really cool. By the way, I love that tab, and I put one on my website. I got that from Marcus Sheridan. Do you know Marcus?
I think he got it from me. No, I don't know him.
he may have, but boy, you should look him up. He's a really interesting guy and a great guy. And he's the one who really, in my mind, cemented this whole notion of, you know, really all your website is doing for people is answering their questions. And so, you know, people a lot of times will struggle with, oh, I don't know what to put on my website, or they'll blog about things that they care about. And really, the lens from which you need to build out your online presence, really in all forms, is the You Ask, I Answer. What are people asking about in your target market? If you answer those questions through consistent and good content, you're going to be way ahead of the game, and you're going to attract people that you want. So I love that you have that. I have the same thing. Mine's a little bit different. It's videos on mine, but I love that people can just go on and put questions in, and you'll do the best you can to answer them. That's fantastic.
Well, you're a perfect example of this, Josh. I mean, anybody that's a listener of Josh, I'm sure there are thousands or people like Josh's. This takes a lot of work, putting together these podcasts and blogging and things like that. And it's not something that we're paid for. It's something that we're passionate about. It's because we want to serve people. And I think that's the type of attitude that resonates with people, that ultimately you do well by doing well for people. And you're a perfect example of that, Josh.
Well, and so are you, Roger. I really appreciate that. And like I said, it's been a true pleasure speaking with you and getting to know you a little bit. And, like I said, as we get into 2015, I may circle back and have you back on the show. Heck, maybe I'll come on your show if you do interviews.
You're welcome to. We'll talk about that when we get offline.
All right. Thanks, Roger. Take care.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks for being with us today on the Franchise Euphoria podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to go to iTunes and provide a review. Also, please remember that although Josh Brown is a licensed and practicing attorney, nothing contained in this podcast should be construed as legal advice, because it is not. The information contained in this podcast is general and educational in nature, and none of it should be relied upon as legal advice. That being said, if you have questions for Josh and would like to contact him, please email him at josh@franchiseeuphoria.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in to our next weekly episode.